Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
I have a very special guest in this hour of the show, one of most important composers of sacred music in the world, really. Karl Ruti is on the phone with us from Switzerland, where he teaches at Zurich Conservatory. Mr. Ruti was born same year I was, 1949, grew up in Zug, Switzerland, where as a Catholic, young Catholic kid, he entered a monastery school where he's taught piano, organ, chant, and theory. He went on to receive his diploma from Zurich Conservatory, but then he went to England in 1976 and studied with Kendall Taylor and Richard Latham in London, and he became fascinated by English choral singing, and he began writing pieces for a cappella choir. Some of these early pieces were performed by the Brompton Oratory and BBC Singers. Then he went back to Zurich, where he began teaching piano and organ, as well as composing, and his CDs, the first recordings of his work, began to appear in the 1990s, and his reputation grew very quickly. By the way, Amazon now lists 16 compact discs of Karl Ruti, but that's far from a comprehensive list. That's just the beginning. There are many, many religious choral works, including Sermon on the Mount, Songs of Love, Veni Creator Spiritus, Stabat Mater, St. Peter and Paul, and Alpha and Omega, which was performed at the BBC Proms in 1999. He's probably best known for a piece we're going to hear shortly, a carol setting of I Wonder as I Wander, which was performed 5 times at the famed King's College Festival of 9 Lessons and Carols. Although he's best known for his religious works, he's composed many works for orchestra, various ensembles and instruments, solo voices, piano, organ, violin, harp, brass band, flugelhorn, and euphonium, and recorder. For example, a 2014 CD was released matching the music of John Dowlin with the newly composed recorder music of Karl Ruti. Karl Ruti, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you. Welcome.
I hope you don't mind such a long introduction.
No, that's very flattering what you said.
Of course, I've known your work for quite some time. It was brought to my attention by our mutual friend, Bob Riley, many, many years ago. As when I was publisher and editor of Crisis, he published an interview with you in one of our magazines. And so I've been listening to your music for quite a while. I'm just delighted to have you on the show. You're a Catholic, and you compose in a very explicit way. You talk about glorifying God. You're very, what we would call in the United States, sort of evangelical in the way you express yourself. I'm just wondering, in such a secular culture as we read about, I don't know if it's true, in Europe, has that been a problem for you?
I don't think so, no. I get all the time commissions, and all these commissions are very often for religious things, with religious text or with choir or even for the church. So I don't think I suffer under being religious. It's rather my tonal language of music, which is not so accepted in Switzerland or Germany or so, for the official world, but not for the ordinary people. I think they like it very much.
So the bigger challenge has been your loyalty to tonality, the way in which that's flown in the face of the post-Schoenberg and Webern, post-tonality, Boulez, etc. But like you say, the people, that's what the people want, because they want music for the human ear. Is that correct?
Yes. I get marvelous reactions of ordinary people who understand my music as I do. So that's always very great. And I don't think atonal music must be the music for all the time. It used to be the music for the 1920s, 1930s, 40s, and so on, but then it changed. So
yeah, unfortunately, it lasted well into the 70s and 80s over here in the United States.
Yeah, but in England, that was different. Also, tonal music was accepted very much.
Well, you still had Ray Vaughan Williams and Frederick Delius,
yeah,
and Gerard Finzi and Herbert Howells. You still had that choral, partly choral tradition, right?
Yeah.
So I want to play this first piece, which is it fair to say it's your best known work?
Yeah, that's crazy, because when I was asked to write this piece, that was it was Stephen Jackson, who used to be conductor of the BBC Symphony Corps, and he asked me to write a carol for his carol service for brass, ensemble, and choir. And then I asked him, what is a carol? I had no idea. And then he gave me a book with Oxford University Press book with all these carols, and I thought you can't write just one 2-minute carol, but then I made a suite of three carols: I Wander as I Wander, O Little Town of Bethlehem, and Tomorrow Shall Be My Dancing Day, to make like a small sonatina, because I had no idea of carols. And then later, for the millennium, the BBC Singers wanted to produce a CD with modern carols and asked me whether I had a carol. And I told them I've just these carols with brass ensemble. So they asked me whether they could have it with an organ accompany. So we made an organ accompany to this carol. And then it was Stephen Clebury who conducted the BBC Singers and brought it to Kings, to the King's service, and it came several times in the King's service, so without knowing anything about carols, the most popular piece.
Well, let's listen to it. The performance is from St. John's College, I Wander as I Wander, the best-known work of Carl Ruti. Let's listen. Just heard I Wander as I Wander, set by Carl Ruti, Swiss composer, who's on the phone with us right now. Carl, I read that this united the English choral tradition with rhythm and blues, but for the life of me, I can't hear the rhythm and blues. What am I missing?
You can't hear it?
No, I just hear great English choral music.
Yeah, but maybe if you heard it with brass ensemble,
uh-huh.
The blues.
I heard a little syncopation or something in the background, but It's more or less
in the organ.
Yes, in the organ, right.
And the organ is the reduction of...
I see, it's in the brass. I'm going to go listen to a fully orchestrated version, but it's a beautiful piece, lively, and very hopeful. It's one thing I found throughout your work is a joy and a hope and a positivity, you might say, that is quite remarkable and very uplifting as I listen. Now, in 1974, evidently you had a friend who was being ordained as a priest, and you wrote a Our Father as a present to him. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. That was a colleague of my gymnasium time, my scholar time in Engelberg. He was about 3 years older than me, than I am, and he's also very musical, so we played very often string quartets together, he viol and I violin, second violin, and also he introduced me to several wonderful composers I didn't know by this time. And later, he wrote also texts for music of mine.
Oh, wonderful.
Very often for...
Can you mention his name?
Bernhard Schiebri. So, in the most popular song here in Switzerland is a church song called Aus vielen Körnern gibt es Brot. Of a lot of great... it's hard to translate. Many, many small grains make bread. So,
yes.
I don't know if the words are correct.
No, that sounds right to me. It sounds very proverbial.
And in the same way, a lot of humans become jerks. And this song was made for children. And he wrote this text, Bernhard Schiebli. And this is the most popular song of mine because it's in the book every Catholic uses in the church.
Wonderful. Well, unfortunately, we don't have that. We have your Unser Vater, your Our Father. And by the way, this is from a wonderful CD called Songs of Love that is published on the Herald label CD. And this is Ian Moore, Cambridge Voices, singing Karl Rüti's Our Father in German.
Thank you.
We just heard the Our Father, Unser Vater, of Karl Rüti, written as a young man in 1974 as an ordination gift for a friend becoming a priest. By the way, you're pretty, even as a young man, Carl, you're pretty hard on the singers.
Sorry, I didn't understand.
It means you present quite a singing challenge for the singers.
They didn't succeed for this this event, so it was done later.
I see.
I thought the church choir would manage it, but it was a bit too hard for them.
Ah.
But he, as a singer himself, appreciated it very much.
Well, it's a gorgeous piece. It's an early work, but it's fully mature in my opinion.
Thank you.
Now we go to an example of your writing for solo instrument for piano, and here you play your a CD of your own music on Herald Recordings. It's called Karl Rüti Plays His Own Piano Music, and this is written. It's a piece called Rose. It's inside of a piece called Symbol. I guess in German, is that Symbole or something? I don't know. But it's dedicated to your professor in London, Kendall Taylor, on his 90th birthday, and you're remembering here their rose garden.
Yes. He had a wonderful rose garden just behind the studio where he taught, where I was taught by himself. So when I turned back, I saw all these roses, and he himself cut every rose.
Wow.
So he was a gardener as well. And imagine, when I went to him, he was about 75 years old, but we went with him climbing in the Alps and even scrambling, and he was great. And that's why the first piece I wrote to him was called Mountain. And just a small story. When he invited us to come to a recital he played in Leeds, I think. And then he said, 3 days before his recital, he told me, oh, I'm so sorry, I cut my finger very badly. That was the fifth finger. So, but I won't cancel this recital. So we'll go and listen to him. And we went to them, and he changed all his fingerings. Only four fingers.
Wow.
Perfect.
Wow.
Within the program was also the G minor ballad by Chopin. Imagine.
He changed the fingering on that?
Yeah, with the hurt fifth finger, all with four fingers.
Wow. Must have been a genius. He must have been a genius.
Yeah. He did everything mentally, very much. And
well,
he thought this as well.
Well, let's listen to this.
Teacher.
Let's listen to you playing your tribute to Kendall Taylor and his Rose Garden. This is Rose. Let's listen.
Thank you.
just heard composer Carl Rucci play a piece of his own piano music on Harold Rose from a group of three pieces called Cymbal 2. This was dedicated to his former professor, Kendall Taylor, on his 90th birthday. I just love it. So beautiful. Thank you for that, Carl.
The blend chant, Veni Creator Spiritus.
It has such a crystalline beauty. And, you know, even though your music, we call it tonal, there's nothing too straightforward, too direct. It's very evocative. It sends my mind in all kind of directions, all very, very pleasant, I might say. Now we come to one of the, I guess, real marquee pieces in your career, the Requiem, which was commissioned by a very well-known choral conductor in England, David Hill, for his Bach choir. Tell us how this came about, Carl.
I don't know exactly the way it came to me, but they asked me whether I would write a piece for the Bach choir. And they commissioned me a piece, and in the end, they were a bit shy and asked me whether I would write a Requiem, because they knew some of my best friends of English singers have died recently, and they knew also my father has died, so they asked me to write a Requiem. And their reason was because the composer will probably only write one Requiem in lifetime, so they would have to have me writing a Requiem for them. And that made me think quite a lot. So over a whole year, I was thinking almost all day about dying, what the feeling is when you die, and what the feeling is for all our other people who have to have to give away a dear person. And I try to put all these feelings into the music.
Well, you did, and if I might say so, I think this is one of your masterworks, and we're going to hear the Agnus Dei from it. It features, in addition to David Hill and the Bach Choir, Olivia Robinson, soprano, and Edward Price, baritone. But I would just say to the listeners, notice what you do with this simple cello motif at the very beginning that's kind of a falling and fragmentary piece. And I love the way you develop that, and all of a sudden it starts to rise. Let's listen to Carl Rucci's Agnus Dei from his Requiem.
Thank you.
Absolutely glorious and touching. That was from Carl Rucci's Requiem, the Agnus Dei, sung by David Hill, directing the Bach Choir, and Olivia Robbins and Edward Price. We'll talk about it, the Agnus Dei, with Carl Rucci after this short break.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, Chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
In the first reading, Elisha the prophet performs a miracle and feeds a whole crowd. Now God's plan unfolds gradually and finds its fulfillment hundreds of years later when Jesus feeds the 5,000. It finds still further fulfillment every day at Mass where Jesus feeds many thousands. I wonder how many across the world he fed this Sunday. Now Jesus crossed Lake Galilee with a large crowd, and on the mountain he sat down with his disciples, and the Jewish feast of Passover was near. When Jesus saw the large crowd, he said to Philip, "Where can we find enough food for them to eat?" And Peter answered him, 200 days' wages worth of food wouldn't be enough for them to have a little. Andrew, the brother of Simon Peter, said to him, "The boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. What good are these for so many?" And Jesus said, "Have the people recline on the grass." So the men reclined, about 5,000 in number. Then Jesus took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed them to those who were reclining, and also as much fish as they wanted. And when they had their fill, he said to his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over, so that nothing is wasted." So they collected 12 wicker baskets with fragments left over from the 5 barley loaves. There was much more than the people could eat. Now that I do understand. So remember, in each particle of bread after consecration, there's the body, blood, soul and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ. I'm Father Pat Egan, commenting on the reading read this Sunday at Mass. Remember, inspired by the word of God, you can be more fully alive.
Carl Rucci, a Catholic composer. He's on the phone from Zurich, Switzerland. We really appreciate him getting with us what must be fairly late in the evening over there. Carl Rucci, this Agnus Dei just sounds very personal. It strikes me that way. Why is that?
Probably it's because it is not just written about the death, but it's written to commemorate two singers, two good friends of mine. So let's say in Songs of Love or in Verena di Quelle, it is always Cambridge voices and two singers who sang most of soprano or tenor solo parts. And it was Anthony Tootle and Lydia Smallwood. And both died very suddenly, within 1 year. And after this time, I wrote this requiem commemorating the two singers. And that's why it's written especially for two dear friends.
That's very haunting. And the interplay between the cellist and the two solo voices is quite, you know, quite powerful. But in 1993, you wrote a Missa Angelorum, which really, that was the first CD of yours I ever saw from the mid-1990s. It had Missa Angelorum across. Is this a piece that played a large role in your reputation as a composer?
Yes, it really did, because it was one of my very first commissions I've ever got. The very first was of a friend, Peter Wullimann, for Buch der Bilder, which produced all these other commissions. But this was a first official commission for a Swiss boys choir. And they asked me for a Missa Brevis, so that meant Kyrie, Sanctus, Benedictus, and Agnus. And then when the BBC singers decided to produce the Buch der Bilder as well by Rilke, they asked me whether I had written other music as well. And I told them, yes, I've written a Missa Brevis. And they looked at it and said, oh, yes, it's lovely, we'll do it. And they did it, and they asked, well, but why didn't you write the Gloria? I wrote Gloria for them. And they stopped, didn't do the Gloria, but the Cambridge voices did the Gloria and produced the whole Mass with the Gloria. And they said, but the Gloria is so exciting. You can't finish this Missa with Agnus Dei, which is very calm. Then I wrote for them Anita Missaes to finish off. So it had three goes till the whole Mass was finished. And then I changed the name and told it Missa Angelorum, which has a double sense. One sense is Missa of the Angels and Missa for English singers.
Oh, okay. Well, we're going to listen to the section Ita Missa Est, Mass is Ended, which is a bad English translation of the Latin, but it's less abrupt than the Latin. And we're going to listen to a recording by the San Francisco Symphony Chorus on Delos. It's a potpourri of the San Francisco Symphony Chorus's great recordings. So let's listen to your 1993 Ita Missa Est from the Mass of the Angels. Thank you. You've been listening to the Ita Missa S, The Mass Is Ended, from Carl Rutte's Missa Angelorum, sung by the San Francisco Symphony Chorus on Delos. Carl Rutte, which performance do you like better? Would you rather hear the BBC singers?
The BBC Symphony Chorus did it as well, yes. But when I listen now to the San Francisco Choir, I couldn't find out which CD it was. So I think both are wonderful.
Well, I'll send it to you. And I think the performance is the disc of yours that I first purchased was the Sacred Choral Music of Carl Rutte. It had this Missa on it, and it was performed by BBC Symphony Chorus and Stephen Jackson, who is a good friend of yours.
Yes.
And I just wondered if you still prefer the BBC Symphony Chorus to this performance, or are they just different?
Listen, it's hard for me to find out which was a better performance of Ita Missa, because both are so exciting.
They are exciting. Thank you.
Yes.
They really are. And there's
such an exciting way. And because the feeling when I wrote the Ita Missa was a gospel feeling. And I think San Francisco Symphony Choir can really feel like gospel feeling.
Right. It has an almost an American uplift, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then we can safely recommend that particular recording. in addition, now, I must say I was really delighted to discover your piece for, is the best way to translate it, Alpine Horn? Is that correct?
Yes.
And the German is what?
Alphorn, but it's Alpenhorn in English, I think.
Alpenhorn. And I noticed that when you went climbing in Wales with your teacher, you had an Alpenhorn with you.
Yes, I still have it here.
And so it's really something, it's an instrument that you're obviously very close to and very fond of. Before we listen to, we have a piece from the Lucerne hinterland that's part of a suite pastoral on a recording called Alpine Horn Virtuosos on CMC. Tell us a little bit about the Alpine Horn.
The Alpine Horn has just not the natural scale, nothing else. And that's why you get this wonderful Alpenhorn far, we call it. So the natural far, which is a bit lower than the F sharp and a bit higher than the F natural, and has other wonderful natural tones. But it sounds a bit like the French horn.
But it looks like it's 5 feet long, is that correct?
Yeah, it's very, very long, and you can't take it with you as a whole. You take it in bits. You have 3 bits of it, mostly.
What's it made out of?
Wood. I don't know, in English, Ahorn is my... Arveholz, Arve is a tree which grows in St. Moritz, Switzerland, very often.
Well, it's interesting to look at and to listen to. So let's listen to the piece from the Suite Pastoral from Lucerne Hinterland. I love that. That is so much fun to listen to. And I found when I was listening to the entire CD, I couldn't stop. It's Alpine Horn Virtuosos, CMC recording. This is the Sweet Pastoral of Carl Ruti. Now, Carl, you're playing the organ here?
Yes.
Who else? Who's playing the horn?
That's Matthias Kovmail. And is a long, long friend of mine. And he asked me to write a new composition which didn't exist before, a huge thing for six open horns and choir, which is now the newest CD, which certainly will be released in a couple of time in America as well, called Mysterio Montis.
Oh, really?
A whole Vespers about all these mountains in the Bible, like Tabor, Horeb, or the Psalm, I rise up my eyes to the mountains, and many other things. And just six open horns and choir, and that was so strong in to realize this life. People were so much touched by the sound of open horns.
But you play that yourself. You play that horn yourself, right?
I do it, but not on this professional level. No, no.
Well, it's just a stunning sound, and I can't imagine what six of them sound. Are they playing with that orchestra or with organ?
It sounds nothing. Just six open horns and a choir.
And a choir. Oh, I've got to hear that. Got to listen to that. So, I'm too bad. We need about four times the time we have right here to really even begin to do justice to your, to all of your work over a long period of time. Before we play the last piece that we put on the program, tell us about this piece is taken from a CD called Songs of Love, which we mentioned earlier because we played the Our Father from that same CD on Herald with Ian Moore and the Cambridge Voices. This text is from the Song of Songs. It's the famous part where she says, "Let him kiss me with the kiss of his mouth. My breasts are better than wine." Is it difficult to put that kind of thought into music, Carl?
It was a pleasure for me to write this because I was lucky to find the right woman as my wife very early, and we're still together. And I wrote this seven songs of love for our 25th day of wedding. And she played amateur, of course, but just, she loved very much the violoncello and is a teacher of different languages like Latin, French, English, German. And that's why the whole seven songs of love have different languages. All these languages are somewhere. And in the seventh song, all these seven languages come together.
Now, you have two boys, that's correct?
Yes, and six grandchildren.
Oh, lucky you. So your boys are all grown up and out of the house?
Yes. Both are musicians. One lives near Zurich, one lives near Zug.
That's wonderful. Well, what we're going to do here, Carl, is we're going to play... we're not going to be able to play the entire four-minute piece because of time, but we're going to play the first half of it, and then you and I will have a chance to discuss it just shortly before we have to come to the end of the program. So let's listen to Ian Moore and the Cambridge Voices sing from the Songs of Love, Osculatur, Let Him Kiss Me with the Kiss of His Mouth.
Thank you.
That was the first portion of Karl Rutte's osculature from the Song of Songs, so transparent, so vital. It expresses the kind of love that we find in the texts themselves, the urgency of that love and the passion of that love. Karl Rutte, one thing that strikes me about listening to your music is that you have so many different voices, but they all have a kind of a single voice behind them, which I'm not going to try to characterize, but it's, for me, it's unusual to hear someone with that kind of a single voice, but you branch out in so many different directions, and all of them are very beautiful and make perfect sense to me.
Thank you.
Now, are you aware of working from a kind of a central place in your composition?
I think the real composition is always given to you, so you can't produce it. So I'm lucky that all these things were given to me.
So is this a gift from God? Is this a gift from God? Or?
But how this works, I don't know. I will know in, let's say, 20, 30 years.
Oh, don't count yourself down and out yet. We're still young.
Yeah.
Well, I will be delighted to listen to your new or forthcoming Alpine Horn CD. Are there any other new recordings on the way?
Not yet, but you never know.
Well, I appreciate, and my listeners appreciate, and Ave Maria Radio appreciates you taking the time to talk to us from Switzerland. It's a great honor, and appreciate having you on.
Great honor for me. Thank you.
And I hope to meet you one day.
Yeah, great.
I'll be in touch. So all of you who have been listening to this wonderful the music of Karl Rutte, we will be back this day and this time next week. Thank you for listening.
If you have any comments or questions about church and culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.